This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
After a gut punch to the family of Gabby Petito when a judge blocked their lawsuit against cops, they claim, quote, sent her to her death, a reversal. The case is now heading to the state Supreme Court. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. The parents of Gabby Petito, murder victim, just scrubbed in sunshine, beautiful girl, inside and outside, suffered a horrific legal blow as their wrongful death lawsuit against Utah police was thrown out of court by a judge. Recall, Gabby vanished on a cross-country road trip with her then-fiancé, Brian Laundrie, but her remains were found in dispersed camping, basically in the middle of nowhere on the edge of Wyoming's Grand Teton National Park. Laundrie later confessed to killing her, but this was weeks after Moab police spoke with them about a domestic violence incident. Witnesses saw Brian Laundrie strike her in the face, literally on Main Street. Yet they treated Gabby as if she was the aggressor. Then Utah 7th Court Judge John Torgerson dismissed their claim, claiming that the police have governmental immunity from the lawsuit. It's called the King Can Do No Wrong, or sovereign immunity. You cannot sue the government. The Petito lawyer said the parents relied on officers to help them, but their grossly negligent investigation increased the likelihood their daughter would be harmed and, quote, sent her to her death. But in the last days, his decision has been thrown out, and the case is making its way to the Utah Supreme Court.
If you will recall, Gabby and her killer slash fiance, Brian Laundrie, were pulled over by Moab police. Witnesses had seen Brian Laundrie hitting Gabby in the face. Yet, after Brian Laundrie takes off in the car in Gabby Petito's Ford Transit, almost leaving her behind, she had to try and jump in the car window. He was leaving not only in her Ford Transit, but everything she owned in the world. She had single-handedly customized the Transit for a cross-country trip. In the heat of the moment, after hitting her in the face, he tries to drive off with her Transit and all her worldly belongings. She finally gets in, and not too far out of the city, she's pulled over along with Laundrie, who's driving. And believe it or not, the Moab police name her as the aggressor and let them go. It was within hours that Gabby Petito was murdered by her violent fiancé, Brian Laundrie. So, bottom line, can her family sue the Moab Police Department? Well, as of right now, believe it or not, the answer is no. But let me guarantee you, I predict this case ain't over yet, and that it will become extremely complicated and contentious. Remember, this happened in Moab, Utah. The Utah 7th District Court Judge Don Torgerson agreed with the city of Moab. They requested that the Gabby Petito family motion be dismissed, and the judge went along with it. He basically said, this is too big for a district court to decide, and appeals courts will have to determine if the Petitos had a case. Now, many people argue that Judge Torgerson had no choice but grant the request to dismiss the case based on something called governmental immunity. It's also called sovereign immunity, which dates all the way back to our common law from Great Britain. The king can do no wrong. In other words, you can't sue the king, and here you can't sue the government. So what the Petitos are asking is for the judge to rule against sovereign immunity. Well, I think everybody else is wrong. I think Torgerson could have gone along with the Petitos, but he hid behind his robes and decided not to act. Let's do a little reality check about what happened to Gabby Petito.
Scary, and it's nerve-wracking. We don't sleep. We're just actively looking for her at least 3 times a week. We would FaceTime, call, text frequently. She kept me updated on this whole trip. The first couple of days, I wasn't getting responses. I believed she was in a place with no service. It was like day 8 and 9 that I really became concerned.
I've been on that exact route before with the twins in an RV, and the mom is right. There are a lot of dead spots where you can't get a cell to call out. We're looking at behavioral evidence. How many days had passed before mom realized something was wrong? Take a listen to our friends at CBS2.
Police say she's believed to have last been in Wyoming's Grand Teton National Park. Video of the trip was uploaded to YouTube August 19th. Her mother says she left New York early July for the trip, which was set to end in Oregon next month. She was traveling in this white van, which police say has been recovered.
I just believe she's in danger because she's not in touch with us, and she could be alone somewhere. She could be stranded somewhere in the wilderness, and she needs help.
Well, is that what happened? Did she and her boyfriend have an argument and she stormed off? Did he just leave her stranded? My question is, why is he not being forthcoming and telling the story as to what happened to Gabrielle? As I told you, the van is found in his parents' driveway back in Florida. But no, Gabby, how did it all start? Take a listen to April Baker, Fox 13.
Gabby is originally from New York, but she was living in Florida with her fiancé at the time they took off on the road trip back in July. Her family tells Fox News that the couple was touring national parks in a converted camper van before heading to Salt Lake City. The couple actually documented most of their trip on Instagram and YouTube. You're seeing it here, some of it showing them hanging out in a tent outside Capitol Reef. Gabby's mom, Nicole, says she last spoke on the phone with her daughter August 25th.
That's very critical, as a matter of fact, because that travelog video, which I have watched over and over and over, it's called, I think, Nomadic Static with a K, Static with a K. And it's very engrossing. It makes you want to be with them on the camper, this beautiful, wonderful trip. But it's critical to me because her last Instagram posting linked to that video. And that's really the last day, as I understand the timeline, that we know her to be safe and alive. About the video, take a listen to her video, Van Life. Take a tiny listen.
Gabby Petito never goes outside.
You know, you hear this beautiful, whimsical music throughout, and it shows them traveling the country. A lot of the shots are video as they're, you know, looking out the window as they're flying past desert. They went to the Delicate Arch. They went to the Mystic Hot Springs. They covered everything beautiful in the West. How did it all go so horribly wrong? With me, an all-star panel to try to make some sense of what we know right now. With me, a renowned trial attorney, you know her well, Kathleen Murphy, joining us out of North Carolina. You can find her at ncdomesticlaw.com. Karen Stark, you know her well. She is a psychologist joining us out of Manhattan at KarenStark.com. On Facebook, Karen Stark, that's with a C, who has analyzed nearly every high-profile criminal case that I can think of.
Joining me, Lisa M. Daddio, former police lieutenant, New Haven Police Department lecturer, and the director of the Center for Advanced Policing in New Haven, and Emmy award-winning investigative reporter, Christy Mazurek. Christy, let's start at the beginning. Tell me about how the road trip, or the inception of the road trip.
They were living together in Florida, and this boyfriend promotes himself as a nature enthusiast.
Why? Stop. What do you mean promotes himself?
Well, on Facebook and all of his other social media, he promotes himself as a nature enthusiast and believes that getting bug bites out in the beauty of the world are better than being brainwashed by the media. His words.
What's wrong with that? You say it like there's something wrong with being a nature enthusiast. And I want to ask you, is nature enthusiast, are those your words or his words?
His words. His words.
And nature. Can I ask you this? What does he do for a living other than be enthusiastic about nature?
Working at Publix grocery store.
Okay. All right. Oh, I'm glad you said that because they both worked at Publix, but that's not where they met. Okay. I'm interrupting. You go ahead.
They originally meet in New York State. And then he leaves with his parents to go to Florida. She follows a few years later. So earlier this summer, they decide that they are going to leave all of their valuables behind and transform this van into a mini camper, travel up to see her brother graduate in New York State, and then cross the country on this excursion.
Now, it's my understanding, Christy Mazurek, they knew each other way back home in Suffolk County. Then she then they meet each other again years later. It's like meeting an old high school friend, and they fall in love. He moves to Florida. She comes down with him. Her father, her bio dad, also moves to Florida to be near her. The mom and her new husband stay in New York, is my understanding. And then they travel back to New York for her little brother's high school graduation. And from there, they commence the road trip.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
In the last days, the Utah Supreme Court scheduled oral arguments in the Gabby Petito family's case against the Moab Police Department. Lawyers for the Petito family say police should have recognized signs and symptoms of domestic violence. In fact, a domestic violence crisis. When you look at the video of Gabby crying and describing what happened and discover what witnesses had to say about Laundry slapping her and locking her out of her own Ford Transit, threatening to leave her there in the middle of nowhere. She had to try to climb in the window to get back in her own vehicle. Yes, that's domestic violence. But now, Gabby's family will have their day in court. Their case against Moab PD will be heard in front of the Utah Supreme Court.
Now, Judson Burton, who is Gabby's family lawyer, argued the ability to file a suit like this is built into the Utah Constitution, and that the government immunity, as I was describing earlier, sovereign immunity, is unconstitutional, completely unconstitutional. Now, the judge, as I've seen so many times before, this is Judge Don Torgerson, goes to great lengths to explain, before he dismissed it, how he had to follow the law. Well, if this is the law, then the law is an ass, okay? And Torgerson went along with it. What happened? Sharon Stark, it looks like something off HGTV where they have people that live, they redo a little house or a house on wheels or traveling campers, and you're on the road. And it's so amazing, and it's escapist, but this was their real life. Gabrielle, and boyfriend, Laundry, go on this once-in-a-lifetime fantastic trip, and they video blog it, and the blog is engrossing. In one part, Karen, I mean, I watched the whole thing, which is rare for me.
She's in her tent. She says, we're going to hang out at the campsite today. And it all looks so cozy and perfect. And you can see this beautiful natural scenery that most of us just dream of seeing one day in the background. And then one day it's raining and she's holding the tent up like that because she says the rain's coming in and she's laughing. She's just so happy. And it makes you want to go along with them. She's got a very inviting personality.
She's totally engrossing in the whole trip. The only thing, that's what makes it so mysterious and upsetting to think about how beautiful it's coming across and she's totally disappeared. And Nancy, when you watch that, the only thing that you can find is that she talks about how precarious it is, that they like to climb and they really like to climb things that are difficult.
You know, that's so funny. Funny, odd. I was up super early this morning studying about Gabrielle Gabby and was discussing it with my friend Medea, and she said, well, what if they were posing on a cliff and Gabby fell off? And my response was, that could possibly have happened, but why would he get in the van and come all the way back home to Florida? Is it North Port or North Point, Christy Mazurek?
It's North Port.
Port.
Nancy, to your point about the, you know, cliff climbing,
mm-hmm.
On August 23rd, Gabby did post on Instagram that the pair were doing adventurous and risky hikes through some dangerous terrain during their stay. That was one of her last posts.
You know, back to you, Karen, with that knowledge, you know, Christy Mazurek is right. The hiking was very precarious. As a matter of fact, if that happened, why would he drive all the way back to North Port, Florida, which I think is Sarasota County, and not say a word to anybody if she fell off a cliff? Or even if they had an argument, Karen, and she's like, I'm not going anymore. This is it, and leaves. Number one, why would he leave her stranded if that's what happened? But two, come all the way back home and not tell everybody what happened.
Either this is really a nefarious character and he planned something all along, or he went into shock. Something really did happen to her and he couldn't cope with it, didn't know how to handle
Karen,
it.
Karen. If he could drive across country and operate a van, having to stop, I guess, for gas or food, that's not in shock. To me, when you're in shock, you can't think straight.
Not necessarily. He could get himself home. He could have panicked. And that's the only thing I could think of that would make sense out of it, unless he actually had planned all along to do something.
I don't believe that there was a plan all along to do something. I don't believe that. Guys, take a listen to our Cut 5.
I love the van.
So, we are right outside Capitol Reef right now in a free dispersed camp spot. And we've been lucky so far at all the places we've stayed, but I'd say this is one of the best so far. Since we left New York, I've only set up my hammock once, and now we're all the way in Utah, and luckily enough, I was able to set up my hammock in one of these trees.
And we're kind of like in the desert.
Very few trees.
It just sounds so beautiful, and I also noticed, straight out to you, Kathleen Murphy, North Carolina trial lawyer. Kathleen, I noticed throughout, he spoke very little. It's mostly her shooting the video and speaking. He did occasionally speak. But I want to know what you make of it, Kathleen.
Well, first, Nancy, I went and tried to do a deep dive on who this guy is. And all of his social media accounts, there's nothing prior to meeting this young lady. I knew nothing about him except what he is like with this
really?
Young lady.
Mm-hmm,
I did. And it's concerning to me that we don't know much. And, you know, I have a daughter about the same age, and I know her boyfriend pretty well. And I went and deep dived on his social media account. I can't find anything about this young guy before he met this girl. How old is he?
Well, from what we understand, He is a 23-year-old young man. That's my understanding of his age, Kathleen.
23?
Mm-hmm.
He looks a lot older on his pictures, but it seems to me that he would have high school pictures and work pictures and family pictures out there, but I didn't find anything. And so I don't really know if the family knows much about him.
Well, I would think that they do, Christy Mazurek, because my understanding of how the two knew each other is they knew each other previously. And there's not much previously. She's only 22. So she had to know him in high school or college. She had to know him at that point. Then they reconnect and then fall in love. And that's my understanding. So the family had to know him if she knew him in her past. She's only 22.
Correct. They did go to high school together and they knew Brian in passing.
In passing.
Then when they reconnected, they kind of gave the duo their blessing. That's why her biological father moved down to Florida to be close to them.
Listen to
Nicole Schmidt, who's Gabby's mother, and Jim Schmidt, her stepfather, at their most recent press conference.
When she left, what did she say? Like, bye, Mom. I'm excited. What was it like?
We hugged. We gave them some money if they needed it, because they're kids, they were excited about the trip. They left on July 2nd from New York.
What was the purpose of the trip? What did they wanted to do?
Camping, hiking, seeing the country.
When was she coming back? How long was the trip before?
The trip was supposed to end in October in Portland, Oregon.
And what was the last conversation you had with her on video chat? What did she say?
I believe it was around the 23rd or the 24th. I can't recall. But she was having a great time. She said she was headed up to Wyoming.
So the last time that we see her, they were FaceTiming, to my understanding, was around, let's give it the benefit of the doubt, August 24. She was not reported missing by her family until September 11. Why? Well, you heard the mother stating that she thought Gabby had gone into a remote area where there's no cell phone coverage. So she chalked it off. Now, they were speaking every 3 days or so by FaceTime. And her bio dad was also speaking to her. So the first 3 days pass and she thinks, well, she's in a bad cell area. Then we get to the next 3 days and she still does not hear from her. So you go August 24, you pass 6 days, you're now at August 30. Then she finds out, to my understanding, that the boyfriend comes back home on September 11 in the van with no Gabby. That is when she, not the boyfriend, reports Gabby missing.
I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. A judge has granted the defense motion to dismiss the family of Gabby Petito's lawsuit against Moab Police Department. It was a virtual hearing in the last hours. The state argued a lawsuit like this should not be filed against the Moab PD because of sovereign immunity. The king can do no wrong. It's a holdover from Anglo-Saxon common law that we brought with us when we settled America from Great Britain. Well, I got a curveball for you, Judge. If this is the law, then the law is asked. Do I need to jog your memory, Judge Torgerson, about what happened to Gabby Petito? Okay, I will.
I want you to take a listen to what we know about the van showing up. Take a listen to our Cut 24. It's Evan Axelbank, our friends at Fox 13.
Police found the van that they were potentially by the boyfriend's parents. They're now processing that. They've towed it away and are looking through it for any evidence they can find. Family in New York say that Gabrielle Petito was on a cross-country trip leaving Long Island on July 2nd. They were headed to Oregon, but stopping numerous places along the way, documenting their journey in their van on YouTube. Family last spoke with her August 24th or 25th and last texted with her August 30th. She was reported missing this weekend, September 11th, and they may have reached as far as Grand Teton National Park.
What happened that fateful moment when Moab police ignored all the signs that Gabby Petito was a domestic violence victim, named her the aggressor, and sent her along her way with her killer.
Body cam video. Let's go, Tyler. If you could play cut 208. This is Adrian Banker at News Nation Now.
Body camera video has been released from Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie's heated exchange in Utah back in August. In it, Petito admits she hit Laundrie first, but that then he grabbed her face after and dug his nails into her face. The officer is heard on this camera footage, this video footage, telling Laundrie that he is the victim of domestic assault.
The police chief has taken a sudden leave of absence, and now the city is looking into how the police officers involved handled the situation when they were called to stop there with Gabby and with Brian. And many people criticizing this incident because the police called Brian the victim in this situation.
Let me go straight out to Masa Saidi joining us, WFLA TV. How come we didn't see that body cam video to start with?
A great question. A question that we're asking. And another question, is there any other body cam video that we haven't seen yet? There's a female law enforcement officer on that scene. And she is, according to the two body cam videos that we have seen already, she does appear to be talking with Gabby alone while Gabby is in the back of that police cruiser. And, you know, sometimes a girl might reveal more information to another woman. So it'd be very interesting to see if there's any other body cam video, and feel free to chime in. But I did think I saw possibly a camera on her uniform. So that's one big question. But really the new thing that happened when this video was released, the officer says, quote, "Did he hit you though?" And she says, "I guess, yeah, but I hit him first." And she kind of breaks down. She says, "He grabbed my face. He didn't punch me, but he grabbed me with his nail. I definitely have a cut. I can feel it. When I touch it, it burns." So this is what was new. Gabby saying very clearly that he also assaulted her in this way. This is something that we did not hear as clearly.
Let's try to play the entirety of cut 211, the Moab Police Department second body cam footage that we didn't see initially.
What happened after he locked you out? Until you take a breather.
Well, he walked away to go take his own breather, but I wanted to sit in the car because all my stuff was in the car. I had something on my bag. I was working on something at the moment in the car, and he told me to just relax for a second, and I didn't want to relax, so I got really mad. I mean, I don't need to be mad.
Yeah, it happens. Then what happened?
And I told him to water.
Yeah, is there something on your cheek here? Looks like did you get hit in the face? Kind of looks like something like hit you in the face. And then over on your arm, your shoulder, right here. That's new, huh? It's kind of a new mark.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Can I see the other side of your face? So, what happened here and here?
I'm not sure. It was a
So the backpack got you?
So she has a bruise and a cut on her face, a bruise on her left arm, yet she was deemed the aggressor. If Laundrie had been arrested right then and there for domestic violence in Moab, would Gabby be alive today?
I'm Dr. Brent Liu, Teton County, Wyoming coroner. After a detailed investigation by our forensic pathologist, our anthropologist, and local law enforcement, with assistance from the FBI, the Teton County Coroner's Office is following the 4-1 verdict. In the manner of death of Gabrielle Lenora Petito, we find the cause and manner to be cause death by strangulation, and manner is homicide.
To investigative reporter with WFLA-TV, joining me right now, Masa Saidi, on the case from the very beginning. Were you surprised at all with what the coroner said? Strangulation death.
I mean, it has been just an absolutely heartbreaking day. We know that the Petito family knew this was coming, that officials were in touch with them. But as you said, we just learned from the Teton County coroner that Gabby Petito was strangled. It's unclear if it was manual or with an object. We also learned that her body had been outside in the wilderness, likely for 3 to 4 weeks before it was discovered. We had no other information about her remains, as you mentioned right off the top Nancy, about any potential prior injuries, if the body had been moved, none of that. The Teton County coroner, Dr. Brent Blue, kept saying that his job was only to determine the cause of death and the manner of death. Reporters were peppering him with tons of questions. Everyone was asking him about Brian Laundrie, about the potential suspect, and he kept saying that he could reveal nothing about the suspect. But then he made a statement that to me was stunning. He said, unfortunately, and I'm quoting here, he said, this is only one of many deaths around the country of people who are involved in domestic violence. And when he said that, that just struck me because he said he couldn't reveal anything about the suspect, but then he made that statement.
To Dr. Angela Arnold, psychiatrist, joining us out of Atlanta at AngelaArnoldMD.com. What do you think? We have finally learned the cause of death, not manner, cause. She was strangled, and I guarantee you, it was manual. When I say manual v. ligature, I mean ligature is with a pair of pantyhose or a stocking or a scarf. Nancy? Manual is with your hands.
Yes.
Go ahead, doctor.
Nancy, this is what I have been saying all along.
True.
The domestic violence, the intimate partner violence that was going on, he slapped her. That was the last thing we saw. We have it on, they have him admitting to that. Strangulation happens over time, okay? The violence becomes more severe. This is what was going on in this situation. My thought is, I don't know, maybe they had another altercation in the van.
They
got out of the van.
What about that warden, female warden that said, hey, you need to rethink whether you want to go forward with this guy. It's toxic.
Yes.
Do you remember that, Cheryl?
Nancy, I remember, and that's one of the things that makes me so hard.
I mean, now you've got complete strangers coming up to her and saying, hey, little girl, this is bad. You need to get out of this. And now she's dead by manual strangulation?
There's two things that happened in that instant. That female officer saying to her, your relationship seems toxic. And during that event, right there on the side of the road, her calling her parents.
Let's look back at that Moab August 12th. Incident, as it's being called, when finally she revealed that Brian Laundrie grabbed her by the face, and I can just see that hand going down to her neck. I mean, can anybody but me visualize this happening to her? I mean, she's basically told us what happened.
Well, and you know what Laundrie said, Nancy? Laundrie said that she lost her balance but was able to scratch his face, just what we were talking about before. So both of them, in some sense, give us some of the clues that we're looking for now.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
There was a legal challenge when the Petito family's wrongful death case against Moab police was thrown out of court. But the Petito family would not give up, and they appealed that decision. Now, their case is headed to the Utah Supreme Court. Legalities aside, I will never forget Gabby Petito. Her parents are amazing people. I spent time with them recently, and I was overwhelmed at how they are working to change the world for the better.
In a $50 million lawsuit against the Moab PD, noting that before she died, Moab police were called to a domestic violence complaint involving the pair. Gabby's family insists responding officers did not take the complaint seriously.
The Moab police insist that Gabby Petito, this waif, weighs about 105 pounds versus Brian Laundrie approaching 200 pounds. She was the aggressor. Did they miss every classic symptom of battering, that she was abused? The denial, the hysterical crying, the desire not to be separated, the taking the blame herself, explaining away her own injuries, ignoring the 911 call that had just happened where a witness outside, I believe, the Moonflower Co-op Cafe saw Brian Laundrie hitting her in the face on the street in broad daylight. And still, even with that knowledge, called her the aggressor. Okay, you know what? I want you to take a listen to, it's very, very disturbing to me. It's Aircut 428. It's Nate Carlisle at Fox 13.
Here on what's labeled page two, the captain takes a moment to ponder, would Gabby be alive today if this case was handled differently? That is an impossible question to answer.
For his part, Pratt told the captain he worried taking Petito to jail would embolden Laundrie. So if he's going to go bail her out, is he not going to have more control over her now? Pratt's quoted as saying.
Moab said it would adopt the recommendations to improve training and add a domestic violence specialist to oversee incidents investigated by its officers.
So they're still sticking with. They're going down with the ship. They refuse to admit they screwed up. They had Laundrie, they did nothing, and they let him go, and now she's dead. Jump in, Dale.
When I used to teach domestic violence at police academies in Florida, one of the things that's mandated, certainly in Florida, and is now mandated everywhere, is to arrest one of the parties. And there's even legislation that prohibits individuals from suing the police if they arrest the wrong person. So back at that time that this happened, they should have arrested either one or both of these individuals. And that would have resolved the problem, at least for the moment.
Tell me about the Moab police and the investigation by the neighboring county. I believe it was Price County.
Yeah, it was Price Police who did the investigation. The Moab Police Department is very small. And then the chief takeaways from the investigation into their handling of the traffic stop or the domestic violence stop was that these officers involved need more training and they should go back on probation. And you know, it's a small department. They're probably not as trained as a lot of the big city departments we're used to dealing with. So they're saying hindsight is 20/20. We had no idea that Brian was a killer. And that's the point that they're sticking to.
Well, I agree with that. I agree with them on that. But in this day and age, I mean, women are beaten all across the world. It doesn't matter if you're in a small town or a big city like New York City. It doesn't matter if you dropped out of school in the sixth grade or if you've got your PhD. It doesn't matter if you make $200,000 a year or you make $30,000 a year or if you have one child, no children, or six children. It doesn't matter. Women are abused, beaten senseless across the board. None of that socioeconomic distinctions, none of them matter, period. That has been proven statistically. So the fact that Moab Police is a small jurisdiction, does that mean the women there aren't getting beaten behind closed doors? No, it does not. And right there on the main street, Michael Ruiz, we have a witness calling 911 that Gabby is getting beaten. Basically on Main Street in broad daylight. What, they couldn't check that out and figure out this is Gabby?
So I spoke with quite a few experts on the legal side and in the law enforcement side. And, you know, they found the report a little bit lacking. They thought the findings might not have been as severe as they could be.
Okay, let's talk about what you just said, Michael Ruiz. Okay. Okay. Let me get to my notes. I never saw any photos that they took of Gabby's injury to her face. They mention it in their body cam, but I didn't see any video. Did you?
So they talk about them. Yeah, you're right. They talk about them in the body cam, but there's no documentation of them.
So they take pictures of Brian Laundrie and his injury, but not Gabby. Is that yes, no?
Right.
Okay. Did they contact the 911 caller who reported the Brian Laundrie attack on Gabby? Did they call him, Michael Ruiz?
So we found out from this report, they circled back with one witness, but that witness was not the 911 caller.
So then that would be a no. They did not contact the 911 caller.
Not the one who said he saw the, I think the quote was, I saw the gentleman slapping the lady is what the 911 caller said.
Did they mention Gabby's injuries in their written report?
To the best of my memory, I didn't see anything about
no,
her
the
injuries.
The answer is no, they did not. Did they understand state law requirements for a claim of domestic assault, Michael Ruiz?
I would think so, because Officer Pratt even said so in his own body cam. He said, you know, the reason this law is on the books that we have to arrest one is because down the line, someone's going to get killed.
the domestic violence, domestic assault law in that jurisdiction. It seems like they had skimmed it, but didn't really know what they were doing. In fact, in the final findings, they state the officers misunderstood state law requirements for domestic assault. Did they ever consider or write in their report that Brian Laundrie could be considered the potential suspect, or was it always Gabby?
In the initial police report, it was Gabby. In the review from Price, the captain who wrote that report said that there was evidence that Gabby was a long-term victim of domestic abuse.
So in the officer's initial report, at the moment, they could have stopped Brian Laundrie and maybe prevented Gabby's murder. They never considered Brian Laundrie as a potential suspect. Is that correct?
From the initial reports, that's how it seems.
Did they ever connect either of them with mental health caregivers, such as even a volunteer like me at the Battered Women's Center? It's a toll-free number. I manned the hotline for 9 years. Did they ever do that, Michael Ruiz?
It does look like they did. They did bring Brian to a hotel through a charity for domestic victims, that they checked him into the hotel through that charity. But in the report from Price, we see that they didn't connect them with professionals. They didn't give him documentation.
So the answer would be no, would it not?
I guess not.
Dr. Bethany Marshall, what are the classic symptoms of a domestic violence victim? And don't get me wrong, I know that there are some men that are battered and abused, but they are about 1.5% of the entire partner battering universe. So let's just get real. Women are the victims. What are the symptoms that Gabby Petito displayed, Dr. Bethany?
Well, everything she displayed, I mean, protecting the abuser, minimizing the harm done to her, self-blame, not telling a cohesive history about what had been done to her. The fact is that she owns her part in the conflict. She says she's punched him in the arm, but she minimizes that she punched him in the arm because she was so frustrated and he was driving erratically.
He was taking her van and her cell phone.
Exactly. And that you put it more beautifully. That I was trying to collect my thoughts on. I know he had taken the van. I know he had taken the cell phone. Well, that would be the final sign.
Denial.
Right? Denial.
Denial that she is a domestic violence victim. Her injuries. The fact that she tried to minimize, as you said, Dr. Bethany, the damage to her. I mean, it goes on and on and on. The classic signs that she is a domestic violence victim. Saying, would it have stopped Gabby's murder is like reading the tea leaves, but I know this. There would have been a much better chance that she survived if she had gotten battered women's counseling, even over the phone with a volunteer at the shelter. Even that could have saved her life. But the officers, to make themselves feel better, I guess, keep saying, well, you know, we don't think it would have made a difference, really. Well, you'll never know because you screwed it up. Take a listen to our cut 427, Nate Carlisle, Fox 13.
If I had any discretion in this, I would separate you guys for the day and just give you warnings to stop hitting each other. But I lawfully don't have discretion here.
Yet veteran Moab police officer Eric Pratt and the new officer he was training, Daniel Robbins, did let Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie go. The report by a Price, Utah police captain says that, by law, Petito should have been cited or arrested once officers determined she was the aggressor. The captain sustained, or confirmed, multiple complaints where Pratt and Robbins failed to follow the law and Moab's own policies, including failing to obtain witness statements and properly documenting the roadside investigation.
So give me your finals. Go ahead, Dale.
There's a 50% reduction in homicides in domestic violence cases if one of the parties is arrested. That's the statistic that led to all this legislation.
Bethany.
And I would say if one of the classic signs of abuse is leaving a woman alone in a deserted place without resources, then all three men abused her.
In the last hours, a judge has ruled in the favor of Moab Police Department. Listen, I'm from LE law enforcement. I believe in law enforcement. I support law enforcement.
However, what happened that day was wrong. Gabby's case will never be forgotten. We wait as justice unfolds. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.